You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org.
Hey everybody, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Dreeslein. Thanks so much for tuning in. We're going to talk about a lot of issues here today. There's a lot cooking. A little later, we'll dial it back with some softer talk with our friend Stan Tequila for the second week in a row. We'll talk some non-game with him. Then Brian Myers will be with us. Brian is with the group that is pushing for a conservation council to advise the governor and legislature. This was a topic at Game Fair last week. We will get Brian's take on that. Appreciate him joining us. But going to kick it off as usual with Tim Lesmeister. Tim, it's really good to see you. A lot of big topics out there, but we can start with your favorite quote in this week's paper. We had a piece about dove hunting, and I don't know if you saw, I kind of taunted readers a little bit on the front. We had a picture of a dog with a dove in its mouth, and I said, more than a mouthful, you know, kind of wink, wink, that's the rub with mourning doves. That hunt starts on Tuesday, September 1st, but there's still a few guys that go out there and do that.
Oh, yeah. And the quote of the day in this week's Outdoor newspaper was from DNR Wildlife Supervisor. He's in New London. His name is Corey Netland. And while people sit there and talk about how little meat there is on a dove, he said, and I quote, "Not much meat on a bluegill, but I sure like eating them too."
Yeah, bluegill is to fishing as a mourning dove is to hunting, perhaps, huh?
That's for sure.
But fun read up on that. Eric did a very thorough story on mourning dove hunting here in Minnesota. We've got some breeding duck numbers from Minnesota. Finally, here we are in mid-August, finally able to report the breeding duck survey just from Minnesota. We don't have the feds yet. And it's actually upbeat. So a little good news there. You know, it's up, what, like 63% from last year, which suggests just incredible numbers. Now, it was way down for a couple of years, but still, this is, I guess, the highest count since 2019. I guess we'll take it, huh?
Oh, I'd take that for sure. Timing is everything. And this year, of course, the nesting season was perfect conditions. And they say habitat, but weather is a huge factor too when it comes to making sure that the duck population grows, maintained. And this is what we had this year was phenomenal duck nesting conditions, and you can see the results.
Well, last year we had a lot of rain, but it was like in May and June when the birds had already migrated through. This year it was a little earlier. It was about a month earlier. The timing of those rains, even though it's pretty dry now, was pretty good. There was water on the landscape when the birds, you know, came north, and so they said, we'll stick around Minnesota. So the DNR saying statistically it doesn't mean a whole lot. And then, you know, if the birds are here, that might mean there weren't as many in other portions of the duck factory. So we need to see those federal numbers. But still, like I say, kind of bodes well for waterfowl hunting, especially that early teal season, which kicks off, what, the 5th, Tim? That is not too far away.
Yeah, it is not
just
too far away.
A little over a couple weeks away. So some waterfowling opportunities coming soon. Speaking of waterfowling, so we've got a lot of national issues to talk about this week, Tim. We'll talk about Governor Walz and the boundary waters. But while we're on the topic of ducks right now, we should talk about this. The Fish and Wildlife Service, I think you and I talked about it a couple of weeks ago. The Trump administration decided they wanted to, I guess, ask the hunting public or ask the public in general Should we take a look at maybe revamping our rules for wetland easements? To their credit, Ducks Unlimited, Delta Waterfowl, a lot of other groups, I think it were like 30 groups, wrote a letter to the Fish and Wildlife Service saying this is a bad idea. These wetland easements were purchased with duck stamp dollars. We printed the letter in Outdoor News. And I think I said this to you. I don't see Ducks Unlimited get ticked off very often anymore, but they definitely jumped on this one. And so a little good news here this week, very good news. The Fish and Wildlife Service is saying they're going to take no further action on this tiling issue. Now, like John Devaney at Delta went out of his way to say, this is just a proposal to maybe take a look at these rules. They weren't necessarily suggesting they were going to do anything. The feds, however, saying that, you know, and this is just working off a post the agency made on Twitter, now known as X, the Fish and Wildlife Service thanks the more than 200,000 commenters who responded to the request for information. We're seeing other sources saying that that total was 211,000 comments. That's awesome, especially considering, Tim, it was just a two-week comment period. We're thanking the commenters who's responded on the process for calculating setbacks for the drain tiles around wetland easements. Our administration is dedicated to protecting wetland easements purchased by the Fish and Wildlife Service that are necessary to protect our conservation heritage as well as private landowners. At this time, no further action is planned as we review the information received. So for now, that's pretty definitive that we're not moving forward with this. We'll take the win here, huh?
It was a fishing expedition is what it was. Yeah, and that's what they were doing. They said, let's throw something out here and see if something bites. And what they were hoping is that there wouldn't be many bites. And what they ended up getting was a bunch. I mean, that was a lot of responses to this. And
In just two weeks.
Yeah, in just 2 weeks. So their fishing expedition, I don't think it produced what they wanted it to. I think they were hoping that it was going to be a non-issue, that they could sneak something in and start to, you know, jump on these regulations and negate them as much as possible. And I'm impressed with the outdoor people that actually did comment, because typically most of your hunting, fishing, angling, hiking, biking, people that use the outdoors, they're so fragmented that they hardly ever respond to this level. Hopefully another issue like this comes up, we can do it again. But obviously we're communicating well enough that people are hearing about it, and they're saying, let's make sure we get our voices heard.
This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreisline and Tim Lesmeister kicking off this week's show. The only point of clarification I would offer there, Tim, is I don't know how many of the non-consumptive groups chimed in on this. This was hardcore sporting groups, I think, that really got the administration's attention on that. I think we can take credit for that, the sporting community. Did you read the Kevin Kramer quote in the story, Tim? Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
Did that absolutely infuriate you as much as it did me? I got to read it. So Senator Kevin Kramer, Republican, North Dakota, he's one of the guys that clearly has been pushing, you know, back on these easements. Again, all purchased with duck stamp dollars. He did not like it. On Twitter, he made his feelings known. You should have proofread this before posting it, Kramer wrote. Strike as well as and replace it with while screwing before the private landowners. That better reflects what the Biden rule, it wasn't just a Biden rule, this has been around forever, you are defending does. Say what you mean and what your friends in Manhattan and the environmental extremists at Ducks Unlimited wrote for you. Wow. I'm not sitting in Manhattan. I don't think you're sitting in Manhattan, Tim. And to call Ducks Unlimited an environmental extremist group, it's absolutely offensive to all the sportsmen out there and any member of DU anywhere. As I said earlier, DU generally keeps their powder dry. I don't see them chiming in on things too often. That just goes to show what a horrible idea this was, that DU got on board quickly and said this is not acceptable. Everybody collectively spanked Kevin Kramer on this, and he doesn't like it.
No, and I think, you know, what's interesting is that he's thinking that he is, you know, bowing to his constituency, which he believes is landowners. And to be honest, there's a lot of landowners that don't actually disagree with this program. They actually like it in some cases, because basically they want to have setbacks. They want to have some buffer zones, and they've got a way to pay for that now. And so they're right along there with it. So I don't think he understands who he's, you know, needs to, you know, basically succumb to. It's definitely not the constituency that he thinks it is. And I think that he's completely going in the wrong direction.
I hope every waterfowler, whether you are a DU member or not, heard that quote and finds it offensive. This is what a standing U.S. senator from the heart of the duck factory thinks of arguably our most important conservation group, a very middle-of-the-road organization. He calls them environmental extremists. I hope that gets the attention of our waterfowlers out there.
Yeah, so do I. And I do, honestly, still, again, I believe that he doesn't understand who his constituency is. And I think that this is going to come back to bite him in the, well, let's just say it's going to take out the word. You know what I mean? This is how he speaks, but I'm just saying it just makes no sense.
And again, I want to tip the hat to Delta Waterfowl, as well as Ducks Unlimited and all these other groups that did chime in on it. Lantawny at American Hunters and Anglers, you know, he posted something on Instagram saying, hey, these groups leaned into this. He was really giving them great credit. And I totally agree. So thank you to these mainstream conservation groups that helped stop this. Now, I don't know that it's totally going away, but it definitely feels like a win. Tim, later in the show, we're going to have to talk about, there's another sort of win and then a really big loss on the national level. There's a lot going on. Unfortunately, we got to talk about serious topics today, but that's what we do, buddy.
That's what we do.
All right. We'll talk to you later, Tim.
Yeah, sounds good. I'll be around.
Tim Lesmeiser, don't go away. We've got more of the broadcast after these messages.
The final countdown has begun. The Ducks Unlimited National Trip Auction puts incredible trips right at your fingertips, and it all starts at ducks.org/NTA. Take one last look, pick your favorite, and don't wait for next year. Bidding closes on Monday, August 25th at 8 p.m. Central. The DU National Trip Auction, presented by Google.
Great hunting dogs deserve great nutrition. That's why Kinetic Performance Dog Food and Outdoor News have teamed up for the annual Huntin' Buddy Photo Contest. Developed for military and police canines, Kinetic helps fuel the energy, endurance, and recovery of hunting dogs and active companions. Now show us your best hunting buddy for a chance to win a year's supply of Kinetic Performance Dog Food. Enter by August 28th at OutdoorNews.com.
Fall is coming, so waterfowlers, listen up. When birds are cupped over the spread, the last thing you need is a misfire. The Rite Ace's patented Inertia Plus system guarantees full bolt closure every single time. It handles light loads through 3.5-inch magnums with oversized controls for cold weather gloves, and its airy recoil pad reduces felt recoil up to 30%. Get elite performance and a lifetime warranty without the $2,000 price tag. Visit your dealer or RiteUSA.com today.
There are lakes across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and beyond that are loaded with fish. And nobody's talking about them. Onyx Fish helps you find them. Search by species, filter for big walleye, trophy panfish, or eater crappies. Check satellite imagery, depth maps, and public access points, all before you leave the house. And now, Onyx Fish is available on Android for the first time. iPhone, Android, doesn't matter. Just download it and start planning. 7-day free trial, then just $35 a year. Onyx Fish. Find new lakes, get there with confidence.
Spring coho at Steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports. Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced, rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Here's a way to give back to the future of waterfowl. Volunteer with Ducks Unlimited. From the Alaskan wilderness to the Atlantic Flyway, Ducks Unlimited has been protecting and restoring critical habitat for nearly 90 years. We're working toward our next million-acre milestone, and we need your help. Whether you're great at selling event tickets, securing donations, lining up sponsors, or pitching in wherever, there's a role for everyone. Join the team that's making a real difference. Head to ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
Hey Everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline is with you for another segment. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Hope you like the broadcast. If so, check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191 if you would like to subscribe. Also, visit the booth at the State Fair, Outdoor News booth there behind the DNR stage, corner of Judson and Nelson. If you want to subscribe, you get a free cap if you subscribe at the State Fair. Stan Tequila joins us for the second week in a row. Stan, good to see you again. You getting out to the State Fair?
Good to see you. Yes, I will probably make it there at some point.
Well, last week we talked about my trip to Alaska. I thought we'd bring it. I thought we'd bring the discussion closer to home this week and talk about what's cooking in Minnesota as we get into the back half of August. Hard to believe that the nights are definitely getting longer. There's less daylight. I got to think some birds are thinking about migration already. Is it the shorebirds that tend to leave first?
Shorebirds tend to go first. We have a lot of things that are already well on their way. Purple martins, which is our largest swallow species, are already flocked up, or actually kind of mostly gone at this point. They flock up first, which is an interesting thing. So you got all these individual colonies of these purple martins, and the whole colony will leave their nesting at the same time. And then they flock up together in large flocks of several hundred birds at the same roost. And then they will all roost in the evening all together in cattail marshes. And to see this is absolutely amazing because they can get 10, 15,000 birds at a time, upwards of 20,000 sometimes, all together in one area. And that is such a neat, interesting thing to see. And that's already happening or pretty much past right now. So purple martins are already on the way. Swallow species are on the way. You know what's a species that people don't think about leaving and that they're mostly already gone is the common grackle. The grackle, which is your backyard bird, you know, it's a big dark bird with a long tail. They pack up and they take off also. So it's interesting to see a lot of these species that are going. Shorebirds are also early migrants. They move through fairly quickly. They require those shallow water areas. And so they're still looking for shallow water areas as they move on through. So, yeah, we're seeing a lot of activity. One of my favorite things, though, at this time of year is the nighttime sounds. So after dark, step outside and listen. If you compare it to just 1 month ago, the sounds at night are minimal. But in August, the sounds at night are spectacular. There's so much going on. So we have katydids calling, crickets calling, a whole wide variety of insects are calling. And it is the quintessential summer night sounds right now. And that is pretty darn cool. Nature sounds have always been something I've been interested in. And I've spent a lot of time recording natural sounds outside. And if I could, I'd like to mention that I have four albums celebrating our national parks coming out on any of the music platforms that you've got out there. And it's all recordings from our national parks. I got one from Everglades National Park, one for Yellowstone National Park, one for Teddy Roosevelt National Park. Four national parks. We're celebrating those national parks, you know, being on our 250th anniversary of America. So these things are available for people to listen to. And I spend a lot of time listening and then recording these sounds and producing these sounds for people to enjoy. No music, no narration, just beautiful sounds and they're typically morning dawn songs, typically when a lot of birds are calling. So people can check that out at any of the things.
One of the sounds we associate with spring are our amphibians, right? Tree frogs, chorus frogs. Are there fewer of those this time of year? Seems like I don't hear those as much in around my home like I do in the spring.
Right. And so almost all of the amphibian calls are males calling for females. And so at this time of year, all the breeding is pretty much done with that. So most of these smaller frogs are in tadpole stages right now. And so they're not calling anymore. And when you hit about August, especially late August, like we are now, you don't hear these frogs anymore. There's certainly a spring and summer, up into mid-July. But then after that, they kind of quiet down and get ready for the wintertime.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline and Stan Tequila are catching up here a little bit, talking about what's cooking in Minnesota. You've had a number of interesting columns here this summer, Stan. I know you mentioned purple martins, and another swallow species is the cliff swallow, something that a species I hadn't thought a lot about. I've been watching as I see birds go by to see if they've got that distinctive white patch. That was a really key learning from your column, I thought.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad to hear that. Cliff swallows are really interesting in that they usually are in groups of
200, 300, 400 at a time. They nest on cliffs around. And most of ours now, of course, are under bridges because they have there's way more bridges than there are cliffs hanging around. And they are really cool in that they built these mud nests. They look like gourds and like a hollowed out gourd with a little snout for an entrance to it. And the birds make this by simply picking up one beakful of mud at a time. It'll take several thousand beakfuls to build this adobe style nest that they stick to the underside of bridges or on the cliff faces and things. It's protected. It's got a flat, you know, top over it. And so it's really a well-designed and well-located nest for their reproduction. And they use these nests over and over again for year after year because they usually stick together pretty well.
But are they wrapped up nesting now?
Yeah.
For the most part?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those colonies are probably fairly vacant as summer winds down.
Exactly. So under your favorite bridge, take a look and you'll be able to see these anywhere from 2 to 5 of these. Usually it's a small number of them, up to several hundred of them can be all together. And they can put their nests so close together that the nests are actually touching each other and they kind of, you know, overlap each other
right,
a little bit too.
Right. A species that is nesting now, though, is the goldfinch, right? Small little yellow birds. They're one of our latest nesters in the summer, aren't they?
Yeah, them along with cedar waxwings. These are two species that are late summer nesting birds. And most of it is because cedar waxwings rely a lot on insects. And so there's more insects at this time of year. Plus, they're frugivorous, meaning that they eat fruit and they are going for the fruit crop that is mostly available at this time of year too. So, and then with the goldfinches, they're eating a lot of thistle and the thistle seeds, and those don't mature until this time of year. Right. So that they are actually using this time of year to help feed. What's really interesting about the goldfinch is that, so you think of a robin, because, you know, mom or dad comes back to the nest with a worm or a bug or something like that, feeds the babies. Goldfinch are very different in that they will eat seeds. The parents will eat the seeds themselves. And then in their crop, the lining of their crop sheds the cells, which is called crop milk. And then with those seeds, they regurgitate up a slurry of partially digested seeds and the crop milk to feed their babies. Mm. So it's very different from most other bird species.
Sounds gross, but nutritious.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's, oh no, more, more seed vomit, mom. Really?
Yeah, right.
This is not good.
Stan, before we go, I mentioned Alaska last week. There were two songbird species or smaller birds that I did see up there that I didn't mention to you. One, I think we saw some flocks of Bohemian waxwings.
Yes.
That was cool, way up in interior Alaska. And then crossbills. We had a couple flocks of crossbills. It was fun to see them. They're pretty unique. We get a few of those, right, during the winter in the north. But to see them on their summer range, that was gratifying.
We have a lot in common with Alaska. Minnesota has a lot in common with Alaska in that we share many of the bird species too, including things like Bohemian waxwings, red crossbills, white wing crossbills. Both of these species crossbills are found here and found there. And so they're pretty neat to see. And they rely on that boreal forest, that pine forest that we have in northeastern Minnesota.
Yeah, so some of them will pop up here, but they're a pretty cool looking bird. They're big, pretty big for a songbird also. Mm-hmm. Well, Stan, thanks for joining me. I encourage folks to check out your website, naturesmart.com. I'm sure you've got a lot going on here as we get into the heart of migration in late August and into September. It's going to be a fun time of year the next few months.
Sounds good, Rob.
All right, take care. Stan Tequila, naturesmart.com. Let's break more of the broadcast after these messages.
The final countdown has begun. The Ducks Unlimited National Trip Auction puts incredible trips right at your fingertips, and it all starts at ducks.org/NTA. Take one last look, pick your favorite, and don't wait for next year. Bidding closes on Monday, August 25th at 8 p.m. Central. The DU National Trip Auction, presented by Google.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the Atlantic Flyway, across America's Great Plains and down the Mississippi Delta, Ducks Unlimited has protected and restored habitat for nearly 90 years. We need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone and ensure waterfowl for generations to come. Whether you're selling tickets, securing donations, or finding that next sponsor, there's a role for everyone. Join today at ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
From sunrise casts to sunset stories by the fire, Fireside Lodge is more than a fishing trip. It's an experience worth coming back to. Cast your line into pristine northwestern Ontario waters, reel in the catch of a lifetime, and unwind in comfort at the end of the day. Whether it's your first trip or an annual tradition, Fireside Lodge delivers the experience you've been waiting for. Book your 2026 adventure today at firesidelodge.com or call 1-800-545-0815.
Great hunting dogs deserve great nutrition. That's why Kinetic Performance Dog Food and Outdoor News have teamed up for the annual Huntin' Buddy Photo Contest. Developed for military and police canines, Kinetic helps fuel the energy, endurance, and recovery of hunting dogs and active companions. Now show us your best hunting buddy for a chance to win a year's supply of Kinetic Performance Dog Food. Enter by August 28th at OutdoorNews.com.
Backcountry hunters and anglers, the men and women working hard to keep public lands in public hands. Check us out at BackcountryHunters.org.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you like the content of the broadcast. If so, check us out online at OutdoorNews.com where you can subscribe to our print or digital versions or give us a call at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe that way or visit us out at the State Fair. Of course, we've got that big booth out there at the corner of Judson and Nelson right behind the DNR stage. State Fair gets going next weekend, so drop in. You get a free cap if you subscribe at the fair. I want to talk about kind of a little bit of an effort that's going on. It was a big part of the discussion out of Game Fair the past couple of weekends. It involves some of the folks behind the Duck Summit. It's an effort to perhaps create a Citizen Conservation Advisory Council here in Minnesota. I'm really excited to have a guest with us now. He hasn't been with us before. His name is Brian Myers. He's a spokesperson for the group that's kind of behind this, called Minnesotans United for Conservation. Brian joins us now. Hey, Brian, thanks a lot for carving out some time.
Oh, it's a delight. Thank you so much for having me on.
First off, that we had the Duck Summit back in, was that April, late March, early April?
It was in March. In March in Nicollet, Minnesota. 300 people in attendance from all over the state.
And there was a lot of chatter about, how we're going to improve duck hunting in Minnesota. Any steps forward with some of the conclusions from the Duck Summit that you'd like to share here, Brian?
We've had some positive feedback from the DNR about, getting input into the 2027 season. I think that's positive. I think there's definitely a desire to improve duck hunting in the state of Minnesota. Kind of our group believes that if you can increase the population of ducks, and make duck hunting more successful, you'll then recruit more duck hunters. So that's our philosophy. And we think that there's a lot that can be done, not only from habitat, but also from a regulation standpoint.
And of course, we've got this 3-duck bag limit proposal out there. And some of the members from the Duck Summit organizers wrote a commentary in Outdoor News about that last week. I'd encourage folks to give that a read. But let's talk about, this latest effort that you folks are involved in. Minnesota does not have, a real formal oversight committee over what the DNR does, what the legislature does in terms of natural resources management. We have some small, quote unquote, oversight committees, but we don't have anything like the Wisconsin Conservation Congress or the Wisconsin Natural Resources Board. I think 40 states have something like that in place. And it sounds like you folks are now advocating that perhaps Minnesota should implement something like that. You want to elaborate on that a little bit for us, Brian?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of great models out there. As you say, there's 40 states that do have this type of thing. All of the surrounding states have a Citizens Advisory Council for Fish and Wildlife Management and Conservation. Missouri is probably the poster child for this, as far as they've had this type of council, I think, in place since 1931. And it's a nonpartisan type of board, and it's gotten great results. And so I think in Minnesota, we've got the Lessard-Sams program, which obviously has added a lot of habitat to the landscape. And there's a citizens committee that oversees where that funding goes for that. But when it comes to overall conservation and what's going on at the DNR, they've typically had roundtables for fish, or they've had roundtables for wildlife. Years ago, I think there were probably one on waterfowl, but it's not really an oversight thing. It's input kind of after the fact. And so we really think that if we had a Citizens Advisory Council in Minnesota, appointed by the governor, some really positive things could happen in changing the status quo at the DNR. And at Game Fair the last two weekends, we had 87.5% of the people that took the survey at our booth were in favor of having a Citizens Advisory Council.
They liked it. Again, calling it a Citizens Conservation Advisory Council. In your mind, or in the mind of your fellow proponents, is this something like a natural resources board that, you know, has some power over DNR decisions, or is it purely advisory? I'm just wondering, does it have any teeth?
Well, I think, you know, there's two ways to look at this. I think our approach is that if it's not policy making or approving policy, but advisory, it's something that the new governor, whether it be Amy or Lisa, that either one of them could appoint this advisory board. I think the concept would be, see how it goes, and then hopefully the legislature would see the advantage of it, and then it could be put into law. And that at that point, it could be, there's basically two models out there in the U.S., one purely advisory and the other one more policy setting. And so I think it's one of those things that it would be a bridge too far probably to get real teeth into it at the beginning. So I think getting started with an advisory form, prove the value of it, and then hopefully the legislature and governor would see the advantage and push forward.
You listen to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. We are chatting with Brian Myers. He's a spokesperson with Minnesotans United for Conservation. They had a booth out at Game Fair, and they are advocating for a number of things, including better duck management in the state, but also they had a survey out there on whether Minnesota should create a Citizens Conservation Advisory Council. And it sounds like it got strong feedback, positive feedback out there at Game Fair among the rank and file. Brian, I would point out, you know, we interviewed both Amy Klobuchar and Lisa Damuth the past couple weekends. Folks can listen to those interviews and watch those interviews at youtube.com. We asked both candidates about this concept, and both of them said they liked it.
Yeah, I think, you know, the idea that this is a bipartisan effort, I think, is really key. It shouldn't be political. One of the concerns that people did have when they came to our booth at Game Fair was, how is this not just going to be a bunch of political hacks appointed to it by the governor, whoever it is? And I think we're really committed to making sure that the people that would be on this Citizens Advisory Council are seasoned outdoor people, passionate about habitat, passionate about clean water, passionate about ducks, fish, big game, et cetera. And then obviously the non-consumptive community as well, as far as, I think ag needs to be at the table. If we don't work with ag, we're not going to get anything done. The tribal nations, I think, probably need to be at the table, because obviously a lot of this impacts them and in a positive way. And I think also the scientific community. You know, and I think unfortunately in Minnesota, a lot of our DNR policy is driven by politics versus science. And so we really want to be committed what's the research saying? Are there areas where we don't have research? There's been very little research, as an example, on ducks and what's going on with waterfowl in the state.
I like to point out that, you know, in Wisconsin, you've got this Natural Resources Board that was highly politicized between 5 and 10 years ago. It got absolutely out of control, with a number of board members refusing to give up their seats after their term was up. Now it has mellowed out. It seems like it's back to doing good work again. But I worry a little bit, especially when you're talking about allowing a governor to appoint all these. What guardrails can you put into place to make sure that the kind of qualified people you just suggested actually get appointed, Brian? Because I remember a legislator 25 years ago from outstate Minnesota pitching this sort of concept and saying it should be populated all with farmers because they're the ones feeding the deer. I mean, you know, that kind of mindset. Yeah, how do you ensure that you get a good balance of people on one of these advisory councils, Brian?
Well, I think a couple of ways. One is you want to have a third of the people, and we're thinking probably 7 to 9 people is the right number, probably 9 given the diversity of habitat and issues in the state of Minnesota. That way you can have, you know, broad representation of the various outdoor constituencies. But I think the key here is you have to have a rolling appointment of people. So as an example, 3-year terms, no more than 2 terms, so 6 years max. A third of the people would roll off every year, so a governor, you know, can't load it up forever and be very, very serious about that. So I think that's a best practice that happens with nonprofit boards and airport commissions, et cetera. So we know that concept works. And then on top of that, I think the recommendations for people that would serve on this need to come from the conservation community and from the public versus just people that worked on campaigns, et cetera. So I think having endorsements by MinFish, Pheasants Forever, DU, Deer Hunters Association, Turkey Federation, Trout Unlimited, et cetera, and have real people that have been avid outdoors people their whole lives and that understand habitat management. Because, I mean, if you've been a duck hunter and you also have been involved in habitat restoration, as many of us have, making sure that people have that sort of credibility. And then I think when you see appointments, if the public sees that these people don't have those kind of credentials, obviously, you know, I think there's going to be consequences.
Well, from a journalist point of view, I love the idea, Brian, right? I mean, this is something Outdoor News would be covering in depth with every one of their meetings. Yeah. This is our meat and potatoes kind of topic. I worry a little bit about another layer of government. And I know in the early stages, that's not really what it is. If it's advisory, it's not necessarily that's not necessarily a layer of government. Like I say, we have oversight committees now with no teeth. They seem like they get a little lost out there. Reassure me that this thing's going to have a little more, is power the right word? A little more gravitas, I guess, than some of the existing oversight committees we've got out there.
Well, to me, because this is big picture at the top of when it comes to strategy of, you know, habitat and what's going on with fish and wildlife, I think it's really important that if this does get formed, getting that press coverage that it would deserve, I think is going to be key. The other thing I think that's important, as we've been talking about the structure of it and having this broad, you know, diverse set of people that are high-level thinkers, I mean, in Minnesota, we've seen, you know, the duck population certainly is not where we want it to be. Pheasants have suffered. The deer camps in northern Minnesota shutting down. Fishing certainly has a lot of challenges around the state, and they're different challenges. This group probably needs to meet on Saturdays, needs to have presentations from the DNR, but then also actually tour to see what's going on. What's going on with the wildlife management areas, with the water quality, with hatcheries, et cetera. And I think if you do that and you rotate it around the state so it's not just something hidden in St. Paul, you're going to have great input from the state. And I think anything we do in that regard is going to be better than what we have today.
Brian, I'm out of time, but if folks like the idea and they want to get behind it, what can they do?
They can go to our website. It's minuncon.com, MINNUNCON.com.
Good enough. We'll encourage folks to check that out. Thanks for spending so much time with me here, Brian. We'll be monitoring this closely.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
That was Brian Myers from Minnesotans United for Conservation. Their website is MINNUCON.com, MINUCON.com. Don't go away. More of the broadcast after these messages.
The final countdown has begun. The Ducks Unlimited National Trip Auction puts incredible trips right at your fingertips, and it all starts at ducks.org/NTA. Take one last look, pick your favorite, and don't wait for next year. Bidding closes on Monday, August 25th at 8 p.m. Central. The DU National Trip Auction, presented by Google.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
Backcountry hunters and anglers, the men and women working hard to keep public lands in public hands. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.
Fall is coming, so waterfowlers, listen up. When birds are cupped over the spread, the last thing you need is a misfire. The Rite Ace's patented Inertia Plus system guarantees full bolt closure every single time. It handles light loads through 3.5-inch magnums with oversized controls for cold weather gloves, and its airy recoil pad reduces felt recoil up to 30%. Get elite performance and a lifetime warranty without the $2,000 price tag. Visit your dealer or RiteUSA.com today.
A bullseye rash can be the first sign of Lyme disease, but not everyone will develop the rash. If you've been in areas where Lyme disease is common and develop fever, fatigue, facial paralysis, or joint and muscle pain, seek medical care. Reduce your chances of getting Lyme disease by wearing insect repellent, showering soon after coming indoors, and checking for ticks daily. To learn more, visit www.cdc.gov/Lyme. A message from CDC.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
Minnesota's DNR conservation officers
and state patrol troopers are on the road
and the water working to keep you safe from drunk boaters
and drunk drivers. Each year in Minnesota,
over 30% of fatal boating accidents involve alcohol.
And over 30% of deadly crashes are caused by drunk drivers.
Drunk boating
is drunk driving.
And Minnesota has zero tolerance
for either one. Don't drink and drive.
Don't drink and boat.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Driesline. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you like the broadcast. If you do, please check us out online at outdoornews.com, where you can subscribe to our print or digital versions. You can also do that by just giving us a call. Talk to our great administrative staff here, 800-535-5191. Also, we will have a booth at the State Fair right behind the DNR stage, corner of Judson and Nelson. State Fair kicks off this coming Thursday, August 27th. Can you believe the State Fair is already here, Tim?
I know, and it's amazing. It seems like time just keeps going faster and faster, but then that's because I think I just have too many irons in the fire.
He's Tim Lesmeister. I'm Rob Driesline. We talked about some duck issues at the start of the show. Let's bring it, well, duck issues are close to Minnesota, but really close to Minnesota. What'd you make of Governor Walz signing an executive order, Tim, this past Tuesday, directing state agencies to halt permitting and leasing for copper and nickel mining in the watershed that feeds the Boundary Waters Canoria Wilderness? The governor is saying you're not getting any state permitting for this Twin Metals mine, apparently.
What took him so long is what I want to know. This could have been done eons ago, but I'm glad it's done. I'm glad that they're saying, you know what, you can work with the feds, fine. They'll give you whatever they want, but they're in the state. You got some roadblocks ahead of you, and we're going to make life miserable on you.
I have a theory about why he took his time on this, Tim.
Yeah.
And you know, you're a smart guy. You probably know this too. But I think he and other state politicians, including maybe Amy Klobuchar, decided to let this play out on the federal level. They really didn't think it was an issue, right? We had the Biden moratorium, and then in Congress this spring, we had Congress use that Congressional Review Act to overhaul it and eliminate the Biden moratorium. And it, you know, it passed, 50 to 49 in the Senate and 214 to 209, something like that, in the House. And so that put the impetus back on the state. And you had Walz, who maybe, you know, they thought they'd keep their powder dry. Why tick off some of the mining constituency in northeastern Minnesota if you didn't have to? Well, now you got Walz, who's a bit of a lame duck. He and Trump clearly do not like each other. And there was a little bit of a one-finger salute going on here, I think, from a lame duck governor to the president saying, you know what, I can sign executive orders too.
And I think it's going to stick. I really do. I think that Amy Klobuchar is going to be really tough to beat. And I think that if she moves into that governor's chair, this is going to stick. And she'll be there for a while. And as long as she's in there, I don't think that anyone's going to get a shot at mining up near the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. So I believe all of you that were worried about how this was going to play out can rest easier now, get some sleep, because I think we're in a good position right now. But don't sleep heavily, sleep lightly, because when it comes to politics and positions and things like this, you never know what could happen. And you always have to maintain your diligence so that you can stay on top of the issue.
You know, Tim, a couple points. One, I haven't really heard a big federal response to this yet from the administration or Pete Stauber. I probably should have done some more homework on this before we recorded. But will this get tied up in the courts again? Will the feds say, you know, we're going to try to get this overturned in the courts? And then to your point, and to the point of a lot of people who commented on this, this is an executive order. This is not legislation. Now, if you had a Democratic House and Senate here or in the state of Minnesota, could they pass legislation? They could, and they might if you have a full Democratic legislature again next year. But a future Republican governor absolutely could overturn this executive order. We've got Lisa Damath, who was at Game Fair last weekend. We interviewed her. You can read that entire interview in this week's print edition of Outdoor News. And Lisa made it very clear that she supports this mine outside the Boundary Waters. She said she supports the legislation that passed in Congress. So this is a pretty black and white issue between Republicans and Democrats. If you don't want this type of mining in the Rainy River watershed, you know, Amy Klobuchar and Walz, they're on your team. If you do, if you say, you know what, the area can handle this type of mining, there's safeguards in place, then Lisa Damath is your candidate. And like I say, you can read Klobuchar and Damath's responses at OutdoorNews.com.
Yeah, I think that the mining people have convinced individuals that this type of mining is now safe for the environment. They haven't convinced me of that, but they've convinced people that. And I think that that means for some, well, jobs and opportunities and, you know, take these areas that have been set back because of economics and maybe give them something to look forward to. But then you've got your environmentalists to say, we don't want this at all. And so you're right. That's what's going to be what splits these two parties. And that's what's going to be how people vote. If you're a one issue voter, you vote for the environmentalist, you're going to know you've got this candidate. If you want the economic incentives that a mine brings, well, you know where you're going to go. But as far as whether or not this is a mine is ever going to pollute the environment, I'd say you got to do a lot more to convince me that it's a safe situation.
Yeah, I don't think there's evidence that this type of mining doesn't pollute. And so doing it next to the purest waters left in the lower 48 is just a bad idea. That's always been my default. This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline and Tim Lesmeister winding it down. Unfortunately, Tim, we've got one last story that we need to talk about. I didn't get it in depth in this week's Outdoor News because it broke pretty late. But we do have an extensive story already at OutdoorNews.com. We've got the Trump administration announcing that they're going full bore ahead to completely rescind the federal roadless rule that has been around since 2001, passed under the Clinton administration. Our mutual acquaintance, Mike Dombeck, was the U.S. Forest Service chief at the time when that passed. There was a long public comment period on it earlier. What was it, over the winter, Tim? I forget. And the comments were overwhelmingly in support of maintaining the existing roadless rule. Some of us thought that the administration might, you know, try to take a middle of the road approach on this to at least acknowledge that the vast majority of the general public was just fine with the existing rule. But no, they're saying we're going to go with fully rescinding this rule. They say there's another public comment period. I suspect they're going to get overwhelmingly negative comments on this one, too. But call me cynical, but I think they'll just ignore all those comments also.
Well, you know, I spent some time with Michael Dombeck here recently, and he was the chief of the Forest Service when this passed. He was really pushed hard for this. And he said that this policy, when it first came out, was an economic issue.
Right.
The funding for roads came from timber, and the timber harvest was down. All the high-value timber had already been cut, and the Forest Service was left holding the bag. It was about an $8,600,000,000 backlog in road maintenance alone. Bridges were failing. Mountainsides were sliding into salmon streams. The salmon industry was upset about declines in the salmon spawning habitat, and something had to be done. So they put out the, you know, let's have some meetings and find out what people think about going roadless. 1,600,000 comments, 90% were supportive. Bulk of those actually wanted more protection, not less. Now they want to roll this back. And who are the supporters of this? Because, you know, half of the 60% of the people who want to keep it are actually Republicans. They're hunters, they're fishermen, they're guides, they're outfitters, they're people in the recreational industry. And so I think that there's not a trade association or an industry association that thinks it's a good idea. And the roadless policy right now allows everything except for commercial timber harvest and permanent road building. And that's why it's kind of puzzling. They say they need it because of fire prevention. Well, that's outrageous. But Dombeck told me that there's more fuel treatment and thinning in roadless areas around urban wildlife interfaces than which creates a situation where there's no risk to humanity from fires. So if you start building roads here, you're actually increasing the fire situation rather than nullifying it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree with you. Yeah. The administration is spinning this as a way to fight forest fires. That's completely bogus. The vast majority of fires, I think, you know, are started near a road. So you build more roads, you're going to have more fires. Privately, people in the Forest Service will tell you, you know, we don't need more roads to fight fires. That's ridiculous. Building more roads means more maintenance, means more expenses for the U.S. taxpayer, so that private interests, cronies of this administration, can go and access these areas for whatever, for mining, maybe, you know, for some forestry work. The Ambler Road, it's another situation. You know, everyone thinks the Ambler Road's a stupid, expensive idea that's going to cost the public billions. But there's a few cronies of the administration that want to have it so they can access some minerals at the end of this new road. Doesn't matter if we're going to destroy hundreds and hundreds of miles of untrampled wilderness. Someone can make a buck off it. We as the public have got to put our foot down and say, stop. This is not what we voted for. And I'm asking people of all political stripes to do that.
Yeah, I would agree with you 100%. It's crazy. You know, Dombeck, when I was talking to him, he said, you know, he says, I grew up near the Shawamigan National Forest. He said, I used to spend a lot of time in the Nicollet Forest, National Forest. He said, so when I went to work for the Forest Service, I made a road list. I want to analyze road density in national forests. He said 78% of national forests is within a quarter of a mile of a road, right, of some kind.
Right.
That's ridiculous. Existing roads.
Yeah.
And he said, why would anyone want to add more? He says, people are looking for solitude, and there's plenty of space for ATV use and trails and horseback riding and camping. He said, so why do we need more roads? We have plenty. We don't need more. Adding more makes no sense, and it's actually not going to protect us from fires. This rescinding of the roadless rule is incompetency at its finest.
Couldn't say it any better myself, Tim. Thank you. We'll be talking about this a lot more as autumn unfolds. I believe the public comment period goes till mid to late September. We'll nail that down, talk about it more next week when we have some more thorough coverage in our print edition of Outdoor News. But serious topics, but hey, we can't ignore what's going on. Tim, I thank you for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good. We'll catch up to you soon.
Tim Lesmeister, thank you to him. Thank you to Brian Myers. And thank you to Stan Tequila, who joined us this week. Everybody have a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Jerisline, signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.